Slavery is back.
Welcome to a place where private business profit from a captive labour force, yet pennies are spent on medical services to a population in which the Indigenous, the poor and the mentally ill are overrepresented. Where isolation, humiliation and degradation are facts of life. Welcome to prison.
It depends who's telling the story, I suppose. The prisoners would have one view, the people who work in the prison system would have another, and I think it's up to people to decide where the truth is.
Give government propaganda and the media spin doctors the flick. And check out Doin' Time for news, views and tunes on prison issues from Guantanamo Bay to Christmas Island to prisons and detention centres everywhere. Every Monday at 4 p.m. on your community radio 3CR.
We are still fired up and we're still talking about revolution.
Hello and welcome to the Doin' Time Show. This is 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on the dial, streaming live on www.3cr.org.au. We broadcast on the lands of the Kulin Nation, where sovereignty was never ceded. And a warning, this episode of Doin' Time contains audio images of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who have died, discussion of deaths in custody, and massacres. This is Marissa, and I'll be with you for the next hour. We have a special broadcast dedicated to NAIDOC Week, where we all honour First Nations peoples in prison, and the Doin' Time Show is also committed to building the movement to stop Aboriginal deaths in custody. I think of several things during NAIDOC. The first is that week in, week out, the Doin' Time Show is broadcasting a lot of violations of human rights. And during NAIDOC Week, it's always lovely to be able to look at some celebration, although celebrations are often excluded in prisons. And 3CR is dedicated also to honouring people in prison, particularly First Nations prisoners, by broadcasting prison broadcasts. Tune in to 3CR and listen to those throughout the week. I also think of Sam Watson from Queensland, Uncle Sam. Sam was always instrumental in coming onto the show, particularly during NAIDOC Week, to talk about the historical context of NAIDOC Week and the very fundamental role that First Nations protest played in, and also frontier wars as well. And now, protest is still evident, but there are more celebrations. Today's show will be primarily concentrating on Aboriginal content, but also looking at education and some of the things that are being put into the curriculum. We have a number of Mull Creek committee members that will be interviewed. I am hoping first up to be interviewing Uncle Kelvin Brown, who is a Mull Creek committee member and is the first Aboriginal councillor for Inverell Shire. And I'm hoping to have him on. He's a respected elder, to speak with him about the curriculum and how recently Mull Creek Massacre has been incorporated into the curriculum in New South Wales by the Department of Education. So hopefully we'll be able to find him and speak to him. He may be in a remote area, and I think there's a fault with the line, but I'm hoping we will speak to him. If not, we will speak with him next week. And we already have a time locked in for next Monday for that. Then after that, we'll bring you an interview with Erica Dixon, who's a First Nations recent graduate from NAISDA, and she's also a Mull Creek committee member and has done a lot of work in dance, and she's formed her own company as well. So we'll speak to her about that. Finally, we'll speak with Kyan Mitchell, and he is from a company called Impact Policy, and he does amazing work in the community. All of the people that I'm interviewing today are happy to share their stories, and they will tell me what land they're on and where they live during their introductions. Just before we begin our interviews, I will just give a very brief history of NAIDOC. So before the 1920s, Aboriginal rights groups boycotted so-called Australia Day, 26 January, in protest against the status and treatment of Indigenous Australians. By the 1920s, they were increasingly aware that the broader Australian public were largely ignorant of the boycott. If the movement were to make progress, it would need to be active. Several organisations emerged to fill this role, particularly the Australian Aborigines Progressive Association in 1924 and the Australian Aborigines League in 1932. Their efforts were largely overlooked, and due to police harassment, the AAPA abandoned their work in 1927. In 1935, William Cooper, founder of the AAL, drafted a petition to send to King George V, asking for special Aboriginal electorates in federal parliament. The Australian government believed that the petition fell outside its constitutional responsibilities. And 1938, on so-called Australia Day, protesters marched through the streets of Sydney, followed by a congress attended by over 1,000 people. One of the first major civil rights gatherings in the world, it was known as the Day of Mourning. Following the Congress, a deputation led by William Cooper presented Prime Minister Joseph Lyons with a proposed national policy for Aboriginal people. This was again rejected because the government did not hold constitutional powers in relation to Aboriginal people. After the Day of Mourning, there was a growing feeling that it should be a regular event. In 1939, William Cooper wrote to the National Missionary Council of Australia to seek their assistance in supporting and promoting an annual event. NAIDOC was a time of protest, and there's also quite a lot more in that history, and we won't have time on this show to look at that. But I just wanted to give you a little bit of a snapshot, if you like, about how NAIDOC came to be. And it's still alive and well. I mean, the theme for 2025 is the next generation, strengths, vision and legacy, and celebrates not only the achievements of the past, but the future ahead, empowered by the strength of our young leaders and the vision of community and the legacy of ancestors. And the NAIDOC journey began as a movement for recognition and rights, sparked by Indigenous communities who saw a future built on justice and equality. And over the decades, it has grown into a powerful national celebration, a testament to the enduring strength of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. As we commemorate this 50-year legacy, we also look forward, honouring the next generation who will carry the torch, shaping the future with courage, insight and deep respect for our roots. Guided by the wisdom of our elders and the groundwork laid by our forebears, each NAIDOC week reinforces our vision for an Australia where Indigenous voices are not only heard, but lead the way. This year, the National NAIDOC Committee takes an important step towards independence, embracing self-determination as a model for the next generation. With every story shared, every act of resilience remembered, and every cultural practice celebrated, we honour a legacy that reaches far into the past and extends into the future. As we celebrate this milestone, we look towards the next 50 years with excitement and confidence, while every day ensuring that NAIDOC remains a movement grounded in community-led vision and integrity. From this solid foundation, the next generation will rise, grounded in the strength of our elders, history, inspired by a shared vision and committed to building a legacy of unity, respect and self-determination for all. This NAIDOC week, we celebrate not just a milestone, but a movement that endures, grows and evolves. Driven by the unwavering strength of our communities, the shared vision of our people and the enduring legacy we pass on to those who will shape our future. Together we walk forward, honouring where we've come from and looking boldly to the next generation who will carry NAIDOC and their communities into the future.
3CR, your station, your voice.
Do a bit of disrupting and cause a bit of ruckus in the colony.
Always was, always will be.
Not celebrate Australia, but instead pay homage to the resistance of First Nations people against this illegal colonial occupation.
3CR, your station, your voice.
This country's black future is a fire. With the right season, that burning school fire.
And in case people have just tuned in, this is the Doin' Time Show, and it's a special broadcast for NAIDOC Week. This is Marissa, and I was just reading out a little bit of history in regards to NAIDOC while we looked for Uncle Kelvin. Hello,
How
Uncle,
are
welcome.
You, my darling?
What happened?
Oh, I was on another call and came into your time break. I do apologise for that.
No, that's okay. That's okay. At least we've got you. Uncle Kelvin, it's so lovely to have you. What land, can you just tell listeners what land you're on?
Right, well, now this is a bit convoluted because it's got a few names. But anyway, I personally call it Dabilaray, which is a...
Could you speak up, Uncle, because we can barely hear you. You there?
Hang on, Twitter. Hang on. Let me change this a little bit.
Yeah. Beautiful. So this is the Doin' Time Show, and it's a special broadcast for NAIDOC Week.
Mm-hmm.
And we're speaking now with Uncle Kelvin.
Is that a bit better?
That's so much better. So, yeah, what land are you from?
Gamilaroi, which is also called Gamilaroi. But I personally call it Gamilaroi.
Beautiful.
Yeah, we're in northwest New South Wales, which our land mass for our tribal people goes from Inverell here in the east all the way across to the far side of Walgett. We go down as far as Murrurundi in the top end of the Hunter Valley and up to the Queensland border. So we're probably about the third largest tribal landmass, as far as our people are concerned, within the nation. Not just the state of New South Wales, but within the nation.
Fantastic. Now, Uncle, we're kind of a little bit pressed for time now, so we may have to do a fuller interview next week with you.
Sure.
But I'm wondering if you could just tell us a little... We were speaking off-air, and you're a Myall Creek committee member, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
And you're also in the council as well?
Yes, I am.
But could you just tell us a little bit about the curriculum and how the Myall Creek massacre has now been put into the curriculum? Is that right?
Yeah. Now, what happened was is that for quite a number of years, the Myall Creek massacre that happened back in 1838, 10th of June, came into play. And what happened was that we commemorated that by creating a memorial out there at Myall Creek itself. Now, for many years, people denied, you know, like, oh, the fact that, one, that a massacre occurred, and two, if it did, well, we'll just keep it under wraps because of the fact that we don't want people to know about it. But then as people got to know a little bit more about the background of it and so forth, back in the year 2000 or just before that, a group of people came together and said, well, we would like to create a memorial, and that's what they did. And it has now been in place for 25 years, this year. So it's 25 years since we've had the memorial in place. Now, a lot of people were saying, well, how is it that a lot of people don't know about it? Well, it's about education, it's about awareness, it's about knowledge giving and so forth. I'm not a big fan of the word awareness, so I'd rather say knowledge giving.
Sure.
And what happened was is that there were people within the Catholic community anyway, in the educational spectrum, sitting around and I said, well, we think this is a story that needs to be told, and they have been doing it for quite a number of years. But just recently, as of last year, the New South Wales Department of Education wanted to create a curriculum process where the story of Myall Creek would be told. And so they did. And so the Board of Education, the Board of Studies turned around and said, all right, how do we move forward? And they created an entire curriculum process around the history, the song lines, and the story of Myall Creek. And it is now being passed into their curriculum process as of October, November last year, and it is now a reality. Now, the thing is, they did the right thing. They rang up the committee, which I'm a member, which is the Myall Creek, Friends of Myall Creek National Committee, and said, look, we want to do this, but we want to do it correctly. Do we have your permission? Because we are the custodians and the guardians of Myall Creek. And they said, do we have your permission to go forward with this? And we said, without a doubt, no problems whatsoever. If you're going to tell the history, the story, and the song lines of what happened to those lovely, beautiful people that died, 187 years ago at Myall Creek, we're with you all the way. And that's where it is at the moment, and that's where we're going to. Because all we need to do is not just tell the history of it. History is history. That's facts. That's bits and pieces. That's data. And then there's the story. There's the story, which is to say, the little bits in between. And then we get to the song lines, which is we talk about everything. The history, the story, the song lines about everything that happened out at Myall Creek. We know it was a tragic event. We know that it's ongoing. But the thing is, we don't see the tragic history of Myall Creek as being the be and all and go and pointing fingers at people and saying, oh, this mob did this, or, you know, like, or this mob did that. We don't come along and say, guilt. Oh, I'm going to put a guilt trip on you to say you did this and you did that. No, we don't do that. At Myall Creek, what we do is we recognise the traumatic trauma that was created, but we twisted it around and said, let's do something this is manageable and right and appropriate to say we can move forward together. Together, because it was white people that committed the tragedy, but it was also white people that gave it justice under the judicial system. It was a two-way process here. And the Aboriginal people that are part of the ideology to say, well, do we have to keep going out there and say to people, oh, poor bugger me, we're going to keep saying guilt, 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 blame, 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 when we can say, regardless of the fact that people might feel guilty about something, or regardless of the fact that white people might be blamed for it, can't we just get along? Can't we just come along and say to each other, we recognise the history of it. We recognise the story of it. We recognise the song lines. And let's just get on together, because that's what we want to do. It is not taking away any of the guilt or the blame that was attributed to Myall Creek. What we're saying is we need to move forward together as a nation, not just locally or state or territorially or anything else like that, but as an entire nation. We've got to move forward together. If we keep poking fingers at each other consistently, we're going to just create enemies where there aren't any enemies. And we say to each other, let's get on and let's take each other by the hand and walk forward to say there is a hope for a better future for Australia. The best way to do it is together. Does that help you up, Bob?
Black, white or brindle?
That's $2, yes.
Uncle, it's so lovely to have you. Now, can you share with us a little bit about your story in the family, for your family?
Oh, well, see, I'm a third-generation soldier. My grandfather, who was a white man on my mother's side, he fought alongside the Anzacs at Gallipoli. So he was not an Anzac, but he fought alongside them. And so, therefore, I'm a Gallipoli grandson and so forth. Yeah, during the Second World War, my father, who was what they call a long gully black, who came out the other side of Tinga there, He stood up and he said, oh, there's got to be better things to do with my life rather than just being treated the way that I am in culture and society and everything else. He said, one of the better ways that I can do with myself is to go out and make a mark. And the way he did it was that he signed up for the Second World War. And, you know, he journeyed through, after his training and development and so forth as a soldier, he went overseas to North Africa, and my father actually fought from Cairo in Egypt all the way up to Libya. And my father is a rat of Tobruk. He fought for it. They lost it. They fought for it again and reclaimed Tobruk. My father is a rat of Tobruk. So that's the first part. The second part is that my uncle, about 6 months later, joined up as well. But unlike my dad, he didn't get to go to the Middle East, to North Africa. He went into the South Pacific, and sadly, he was captured as part of the surrender by the British at the port of Singapore, and was captured under that process and became a prisoner of war. He then was a prisoner of war for 3.5 years in the infamous Japanese prisoner of war camp, Tengi. And in that time, and by the way, this is documented, he saved 60 of his co-soldiers' lives purely because of the fact of his acumen as an Aboriginal person, and he was able to get food to them that they wouldn't otherwise get, or amenities and things like that. Because he did that. He did that. And they said, Uncle Charlie, Maury, turn around. He said, I'm just helping you fellas out. He said, yeah, no worries. And he did. He saved 60 people's lives. So yeah. With the advent of my grandfather being a Gallipoli veteran, my dad being a North African World War II, my uncle being prisoner of war, World War II, I joined up for my own military service, and I served 7 years in the Royal Australian Signals Corps Australia in defence of this country and this nation, and I received the rank of corporal as part of that process. To me, I believe the defence of one's nation is paramount. You cannot do any better service than that, to stand up for your own country and your own being and everything. But I also had a pedigree. The people that stepped up before me, my grandfather, my father and my uncle, they were my leading lights. And tell you what, I would not turn back for one instance.
Uncle, you know what? That is a show in itself to talk about. The military and First Nations participation and the way that some colonisation actually stopped a lot of First Nations people from being recognised in the military. But it's great. I mean, I acknowledge your story absolutely as well. Are you there?
The thing is, there are some aspects of military service when it comes to First Nations people that is sadly still being denied.
Sure.
But there are step forwards. If you go to individual places, people say, we remember them. You know, we remember those blackfellas that stood up and made themselves counted. And we recognise that. That's in individual places. But when it comes to states and territories and even nationally, it's a little bit harder.
Absolutely.
We know that. When it comes to New South Wales in particular, I thought one of the best things that we ever did was the reflaying ceremony at Side Park every year around about Anzac time and all of that sort of stuff. And that is absolutely wonderful. But we should have that recognition throughout every single state and territory to say we recognise the value and the service of Aboriginal people in regards to military.
That's right.
Because it's just given.
You know, Uncle, I think we're going to have to continue this discussion next week because I was meant to have you on at 4 o'clock. And
yes,
then...
I apologise for that.
No, it's okay. But I just don't want, you know, I deeply honour your story and what you're saying, but I'm going to have to move on to Erica Dixon now, who's a dancer.
By the way, say good day to Erica. She's my girl. I love her dearly. I know her personally.
Of course. And that's because she's another committee member, isn't she?
Yes, she's one of our associates.
Wonderful. And then after that, we'll be speaking to Kyan, hopefully, from Impact Policy. So it's so amazing. Before you go, though, let's next week talk about NAIDOC Week.
Yes.
And look at, you can maybe give a report back on that.
By all means.
Please be on
time. Love you, Lily. All the best to you and your listeners.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Uncle Kelvin.
See you, sweetheart.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Tune in to the Beyond the Bars Prison Broadcast during NAIDOC Week 2025. Listen to 3CR each weekday at 11 a.m. from Monday the 7th through to Friday the 11th of July. We'll be taking you inside six Victorian prisons: Dame Philip Frost Centre, Barwon Prison, Fulham Correctional Centre, Middleton Prison, Marganeet Correctional Centre and Port Phillip Prison. We'll be connecting with culture and community. There'll be stories, songs, opinions and poems from the men and women inside. The shows will be live on 3CR 855 on your AM dial, 3CR digital and streaming via our website or on the Community Radio Plus app. Head to the website 3cr.org.au/beyondthebars2025 for more information.
And you're back with the Two in Time show, and this is a special broadcast acknowledging NAIDOC Week and looking at the stories of First Nations people. And we're going to be speaking now with Erica Dixon. She's a recent graduate from NAISDA and a Mile Creek Committee member. Hello, Erica.
Hi.
Hi, I'm so sorry. We're a bit late because Uncle Kelvin was another call.
No, that's okay. And, you know, Uncle Kelvin loves a yarn.
He's amazing. He actually sends you a Cheerio.
Oh, bless him.
Wonderful. So, Erica, can you just tell us what land you're from?
Yeah, I am a Gomeroi woman from Bingra, northern New South Wales. My family originally are from the Piligar Weewaw Narrabri ways, but I grew up in Bingra. Currently, though, I am living on Darkinyang country on the central coast.
Fantastic. So we were talking off air today that you've graduated from NAISDA, and we were talking a lot about education and a couple of other things. Can you tell us, you know, what you've been doing? I believe you started up a company.
Yes, I have. I just graduated with an advanced diploma of professional dance performance for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. So that was very exciting. It's been 4.5 years of study. My two best friends and I have just created our own company, Gawodam and Mayon. It is a combination of the language groups that we belong to, one being Kala Lagaya and the other Gamilaray. Together they translate roughly to being a meeting place. And I guess as a company, we want to be that meeting place for First Nations and non-First Nations people, just to come together and learn and share and exchange their stories and their culture. Yeah.
Fantastic. And so you graduated from dance, haven't you? First Nations dance?
Yes, I did. I started off doing a Certificate 3 and then just worked my way up through the courses to graduate, with an advanced diploma.
Wow. So what does that mean to you? Does it, like you were talking today about that you're doing workshops?
We offer, I guess it's from what we've learned at NAISDA all over the years. We kind of learn to become our own artists, which is really beautiful, and it gives us the confidence, I guess, to be able to go out to the real world and, provide workshops. In we, as a company, go into schools and different communities here on the coast, and I love going back home and taking our workshops back home. And we kind of just tailor our workshops to whatever the organisation or school or community needs. So we offer dance workshops, and in them we can include kind of cultural education, or we're starting to incorporate a bit of our language as we're learning it. We really want to just help educate the up-and-coming generation. So we are very open to whatever the organisations need us to do.
That's so central and so important. I'm not sure if you're listening in, but Uncle was talking a lot about education as well during the first interview, and I don't know how on earth I actually fitted everything in because he was a bit late, but he spoke a lot about Mile Creek and about how the Mile Creek Massacre is a part of the curriculum now in New South Wales. Tell me more about that.
I have kind of just been listening to what they've been saying in our meetings online and stuff, but I think it is absolutely so amazing and so needed. I remember at school, even being in Bingra, where not too far from where the massacre occurred, we didn't really learn that much about it, which was crazy to me, you know what I mean? It's such such an important thing that we all should be learning, especially when we're from a community that has been so impacted by the Mile Creek Massacre. So I'm just, I'm so happy that it's now having to be taught.
It needs to be looked at, as it's so important. Erica, it sounds like you're doing some amazing work. I mean, I believe you were also doing some modelling yesterday.
Yes, I did have my modelling debut.
Awesome.
it was such an amazing experience, actually. And I think it was the first year that fashion has been included in the National Indigenous Arts Fair in Sydney. So it was such an amazing experience. And it was so beautiful because it was pretty much just mob in the audience, so it felt very supported, and it was just a beautiful energy in the space. So it made me feel a lot more calm while I was walking here.
Absolutely. And what does NAIDOC mean to you? I know that a lot of First Nations people don't really gel or connect with NAIDOC. And on this show, we actually have the Do and Time show, and prisoners are now being included through 3CR by having special broadcasts in prison. But what does NAIDOC mean to you?
For me, I think it is just, exactly. It has both sides. But for me, I like to turn it into just another day. I mean, every day is NAIDOC, really, for mob, isn't it? I think I try and flip it, and just I want to make it a day where, or a week, even though it should be every single day, just that another excuse, another reason to keep educating and to keep kind of infiltrating the society, and just to educate them. I think that's what, for me, because that's what I needed growing up. I didn't get the chance to learn about the culture of Australia, really. And I think that's what shaped me to want to be that change. And being able to go back home now and do that is really beautiful. And I think I want to be the person that encourages other people to do that. Because I think, it should be about making sure, like, our young people grow up strong in culture, whether they're First Nations or not. And I want to be a part of that change, I guess, to, make them proud of where they come from, and just to know that their stories matter and they should be shared and they should be appreciated every single day, not just a week.
It's so true. And this is something that I've been advocating for over the years that I've been doing the show. And a lot of First Nations people say that, but it's got to be every day.
Yeah, exactly. And I know friends of mine, who are mob, and they kind of go, I don't really take work during NAIDOC week because it should be something that is celebrated every day. And that is so understandable. Like, that really hit me from a different perspective, you know what I mean? I was like, No, you're so right. And that kind of resistance is actually really powerful. But from my personal experience, I take any opportunity to try and educate and get us in there a bit further.
And your company really promotes education and empowerment for young First Nations people, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think what I love about our company is that the three of us bring completely different perspectives. I'm a Gomeroi woman born and raised in Bingra. One of my partners is Taylor Jackson. She's also Gomeroi. She was born in Tamworth, but she was raised on Darkinyung country on the central coast here. And then our third partner, Halisha Nui, she's a Dena Tkes woman from Mabiog and Badu Island, who grew up in the Cape York. So we just offer three completely different insights and three different lived experiences, and I think that makes us a really powerful group and really equips us with what is needed, I think, in schools and in communities I think a lot of school kids, they don't even know where the Torres Strait is, and that blows my mind, and I just want to be, I want to help change that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so important. So we're going to be interviewing Kyan pretty soon, and he's done some amazing community work. But before we do that, just wanted to know, because, I mean, I'm just so happy that I'm interviewing you, and we're yarning about all this, because it's really important to have young leaders out there, and you're one of them.
Yeah, thank you so much. It is such a privilege, though, to be able to learn and be able to pass that on, and especially on the Mile Creek Committee. I'm really soaking up this opportunity to listen and to learn from the committee members. It's more, I think I'm the one that's privileged to being able to be in a space with such beautiful and knowledgeable people, and to be able to try and help pass that on is just my way of giving back, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, and I happen to know that dance is very, very powerful, and, you know, performance. It's not even just about performance. It's really about putting the message out there, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's about embodying what we're sharing. You know, our dancers, they're not just dancers. They're our stories,
no.
And that's how we passed on our knowledge, and that's how we know our stories and stuff. And I think that's something I really try and get into the kids when I'm teaching them. I'm telling them this isn't a dance, and for some of them, you know, I'm like, I know you're not dancers, but that's not what is important here. What is important here is you're telling the story through your movement. So I don't really mind that you're not a dancer or anything like that. That's not what it's about. It's about the story you're telling, because people watching you, they're learning the story. You know, they're reading the book through your body. So that is, storytelling is so important for me. And I think it goes way beyond just being a dance. You know what I mean?
Way beyond indeed. Thank you so much for coming onto the program. It was lovely to have you, Erica. I'm wondering if I could have you back soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
No, it's been wonderful. And thanks for sharing your story.
Yeah, no worries. Okay.
Take care.
You too. Yalu.
Okay, bye.
Hi, my name is Miss Kinnan. I'm a proud Yorta Yorta, Dja Dja Rong, Kalkadoon and Yirrindali Aboriginal Sovereign Woman. And you're listening to 3CR, guys. Check in with your friends. Make sure you guys are going good. And also stick up for what's right, yeah? Free Palestine.
And I don't believe in fighting today in any one front, but on all fronts. In fact, I'm a black nationalist freedom fighter.
This country is a nation of thieves.
Now, we're never going to get justice here in these filthy racist courts here.
Our people have been massacred, and we're not supposed to grieve for that. We've got to do something more drastic if we're serious about this.
Move over or we're going to move on over you.
Yilliman with Kieran Stewart-Asherton on 3CR. Dives deep into Indigenous resistance and global anti-colonial struggles. Featuring frontline activists, it confronts Australia's identity, challenges power structures, and fuels revolutionary discourse. Wednesdays, 12 to 1 p.m.
And this is the Do and Time Show, 3CR Community Radio. And we just spoke to Uncle Kelvin first, who was late. And then, but he still did a really amazing, I yarned with him. And then we spoke with Erica Dixon as well, both Mile Creek Committee members. And now we're going to be speaking with Kyan Mitchell, who is from Impact Policy and has been doing amazing work in the community. Hello and welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Great to have you. So can we start by you telling us what land you're from?
Yes, I'm a Wiradjuri Ngunnawal man on my mother's side, born and raised in Cowra, New South Wales, on Wiradjuri country. I'm a Bunjalung man on my father's side.
So I was just going to add up.
I've been living here in Gadigal country since I was about a teenager, though. So I've been in Sydney here for a long time.
Oh, thanks for adding that, because it's always important, isn't it, to say where you're living to?
Definitely.
So, Kyan, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, what sort of community work you've been doing and what NAIOC means to you?
Yeah, I guess at Impact Policy, you know, we're a small Aboriginal consultancy firm. We do a lot around social policy and different commons pieces, as well as a lot of co-design, you know, being that linchpin and working between government and community. A lot of our work is between government and community. I guess for us, a lot of us, the Blackfellas, I was listening to Jan before, you know, where there's so much lived experience within our mob. Within our team, you know, there's a lot of professional and lived experience in and around the public sector and different institutions that, you know, historically, and it's an ongoing history, you know, have brought a lot of destruction and trauma to our people. So I guess our work really centres around bettering outcomes, particularly for our families and young people. In regard to NAIDOC, you know, I was really enjoying the yarn just before. I think there's some really good points raised where there is a danger of, you know, putting things aside for 1 week and things that should be happening all the time and conversations that should be happening all the time, but also acknowledging that it's a really good opportunity to celebrate our culture and community. And much like a lot of things with our mob, that celebration often comes with a real undertone of, like, you know, protest and resilience and holding really important discussions. And I think it's a good opportunity to bring other mob and non-Indigenous people to the table for discussions in the spaces that probably exist week to week, but we can really open doors and invite people in.
That's really important, isn't it? So in regards to, you were talking before about trauma of First Nations people and your and the company. Can you tell us a bit more about that and look at the connections there?
Yeah, I think there's real opportunity at the moment with Close the Gap and the priority reforms. A lot of these opportunities aren't being met, but there's opportunity to tap into the expertise of mob, you know, whether it's lived experience, professional experience, and to really do really important pieces of work around social policy, around co-designing programs for young people, things like this where we are led by mob in community. We know that our people have always known what we need, and it's really about transferring power to and agency to people to make decisions for themselves. And I think, you know, at Impact Policy, we, you know, we're policy writers, we're co-designers, we have experience in the public sector. So I guess a big part of what we do is we try and use our skills and expertise to elevate mob to have a voice for themselves.
And how is that done?
Yeah, I think we're really big believers in co-design, you know, so as consultants and also, you know, as many of us used to work in the public sector ourselves, it's about acknowledging the imbalances of power that when policies being made or programmed are designed, you know, historically and even now, unfortunately, decisions are made for mob on behalf of mob. And when people are going to talk in our communities, we know that it's usually extractful, going in, taking out bits of information that suit a bigger narrative, and there's not a real handing over of power to mob. So I think a lot of the education that we do and a lot of the work that we do, we try and model that people are the experts of their own lives and really be purposeful in how we guide others to hand over power.
Exactly. I mean, there's no point in having events and thanking mining companies for, you know, for causing destruction to the earth in a way.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think we really, you know, as a country almost, I think, you know, have to be really humble and be able to acknowledge that the way of doing things traditionally is the power imbalances that we have in this country have been built on purpose, you know, to disempower our mob. And it's really you know, a lot of what we care about is bringing power back to the community. You know, if there's decisions being made that affect Aboriginal people, we should not only just have a voice at the table, but we should have decision-making power.
And what's your vision for the community work that you're doing? Your own vision?
I think for us at Impact, I think it's something that we really talk about a lot and share is, I guess, how all these things intersect. You know, we just had Sister talking about, you know, the importance of dance and culture, and, you know, we're a social policy firm, but, you know, for NAIDOC, we'll be out there doing cultural stuff with young people, doing comms pieces, holding space for mob to meet and talk. And just, I guess for us, it's really about understanding how, you know, government institutions or different institutions and systems interact with us as people, and that for us, change doesn't come in one way. You know, change has to come at all fronts at all times. You know, culture is so important. You know, there's the financial side of empowering our mob, as well as influencing and changing the way that systems work. And it's about that holistic picture. And I think Aboriginal people understand that really well. It's about translating that for the rest of Australia.
So, so important. And what about in terms of your own family? And has your family been affected by Stolen Generation and colonisation?
My mother's side is like real regional Australia story, you know, where missions and stolen wages, loss of family, all these things. My father's side, you know, cane cutters from the South Sea Islands and South Queensland and Northern New South Wales. So two really different stories, but, you know, the ripple effect of colonisation on both sides of my family is really evident, like a lot of our mob. I think, yeah, a really big one for me and my generation is, you know, trying to reclaim culture and knowledge that was outlawed and lost. And I think, you know, when we're talking about NAIDOC Week and events like this, they're really like just opportunities. For me, like one of the most important factors is young people get an opportunity to tap in to some of that, because we know how scarce culture can be in our day-to-day lives, and it has been for a while now. I think, you know, when we're talking about the impacts of colonisation, one of the biggest impacts for my mob and many of our mobs, particularly on the eastern side of New South Wales, is that loss of culture. Something I am excited about for this week is being able to do some of that cultural work around Sydney.
That's fantastic, isn't it? Because there's a lot of events happening, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a bit on. I feel like it grows every year. I think, like, personally for me, like the trap of weeks like this week is looking forward in the calendar towards things. And I think the opportunity is, okay, this is something that there's a want and a need for. Maybe there's things happening all of the time that we're not aware of, but how do we bring these celebrations and these conversations into our lives, into our workspaces, our families and communities every week, every month? You know, how do we create space for young people to access these sorts of comings together? I really feel like that's our next step forward.
It really is. And you were just talking before about stolen wages. And can you imagine all that transgenerational trauma arising out of all that, those stolen wages, you know, and the work,
yeah,
the loss of work?
It's sort of like it's a big conversation that you don't really hear a lot of, at least in my experience. I think, like, Australia as a country uses really selective language when describing what has happened and the impacts of it, which I think is problematic. You know, I remember being a younger man and hearing Scott Morrison on national TV say that there wasn't slavery in Australia, you know, and that sort of language really freaks Australia out. But that's really what it is. And we look overseas and we make our judgments there. But unfortunately, you know, like, slavery was a really recent thing, and people in my family were alive to see it, unfortunately. And it definitely needs to be acknowledged better here.
Oh, yes, ScoMo made a lot of comments about that.
Yeah, I remember it well. I was pretty shocked, eh?
Oh, my God, I'm not shocked anymore by what politicians do anymore. It's just... Look, you know, colonisation is alive and well in the colony, isn't it? And, you know, although it's wonderful that NAIDOC brings joy and we do have to, you know, have positives and, you know, it's important. But at the same time, we also need to always acknowledge that there is colonisation and it is there and we need to work within that framework to make things better.
Yeah, I think, like you said, like the risk of NAIDOC, you know, is like having worked in the public sector before, there can be NAIDOC events that go over half a day that people talk about in their workplace or present on for weeks or months at a time, and it holds space for things that are meaningful or just as meaningful, because we know that change takes consistency, you know. Mob are resilient, community are resilient. We're consistent. We have been for a long time without a lot of reward or support. And I guess in Australia, like, we often have this idea as we plug in and out culture or anything that's black as people see fit. You know, we've had to listen to this national conversation on welcomes and acknowledgements over the last 6 months. It's a good example, you know. Like, we got to move away from that and just know that culture and having community at the table is something that we need to be engaging in all the time, not just 1 week a year.
Exactly, and having Aboriginal people involved in policy making is paramount.
It is. We need black people at the table, on all sides of the table. The resources that are available are enough. We need to have more agency over how they're used, I reckon.
Exactly. Thank you so much for coming onto the program. Is there anything else you want to add before we finish?
I'm just really grateful to be on the program and hear some of the yarns today. It's been unreal, and I think a really positive and good use of a week like NAIDOC Week, not just to celebrate, but question the status quo, I think is a really good use. So thank you for having me.
Oh, it's been great having you. And also, let's give a shout-out to Joe Miller as well, who helped me organise the show today.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks so much.
And also, thank you to Erica and Uncle Kelvin as well for coming onto the show. The three of you were just really awesome about talking about your stories and looking at NAIDOC not just as celebration, but also looking at the opportunities for sharing culture and education.
Yeah, deadly. Thank you very much.
Take care. Talk to you soon.
Thanks. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
3CR, stay tuned, stay radical.
We demand the full restoration of all Indigenous lands and resources, and we demand the immediate cessation of all forms of exploitation and destruction of our lands.
We're here to remind you of our sovereignty and our original demand from day one.
It started with intentional genocide of our people around the round table in England. It's all lies here. Everything's a lie. It's a great opportunity right now. Step into a sovereign, independent republic.
We demand a treaty. We demand our lands back. We demand to stop black deaths in custody.
And we have just about a minute before I'm out of here. So this ends the show of special broadcast to NAIDOC Week. Also, just very quickly, I wanted to thank everybody that has donated to the Doin' Time Show.
We made our target. And thank you so much. And I'll be reading out all those donations again next week so that we don't leave anybody out. Stay tuned every day. every day. I go crazy. Stay tuned every Monday for the Doing Time Show, 4 to 5 p.m. And thank you to all our guests and contributors for Aboriginal content. Thanks so much. Bye.
As long as you a true fella, as long as you a real fella. All the people of different races with different lives in different places, it doesn't matter what your name is, we got to have lots of changes. We need more brothers if we're to make it. We need more sisters if we're to save it. Are you the one who's gonna stand up and be counted? Are you the one who's gonna be there when we're shouting? Are you the one who's always ready with a helping hand? Are you the one who understands this family plan? Black fella, white fella, a yellow fella, any fella, it doesn't matter what you color, as long as you a true fella. All the people of different races with different lives in different places, it doesn't matter which religions, it's all the same when the ship is sinking. We need more brothers if we can make it. We need more sisters.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.